Hello everyone, I'm Julia Charlton and I'm delighted to be with you today to talk about the Hong Kong Stock Exchange's proposals set out in its consultation paper on proposals to optimise IPO price discovery and open market requirements, which were published in December 2024. Turning now to the Stock Exchange's consultation paper and its proposed changes to the listing rules, these proposed reforms fall into two main areas: the IPO price discovery process and the requirements for an open market. The overarching aim of the proposals, according to the exchange, is to increase the competitiveness of Hong Kong's listed securities market. The period for responding to the consultation paper closed on 19th March 2025, and we're now waiting for the exchange to publish their consultation conclusions. Looking first at the exchange's proposals regarding the public float requirement, as I'm sure you know, the requirement for a listed company to have a public float means that a percentage of its listed shares must be held by the public. The aim of this requirement is to ensure that sufficient shares are available for trading by public shareholders. At the time of an IPO, the satisfaction of the public float also indicates the level of public interest in the listed company's shares. The minimum percentage of public float is currently calculated as a percentage of a listed company's total number of issued shares, excluding any treasury shares. So in calculating the public float, the numerator represents the shares held by the public and the denominator represents the listed company's total number of issued shares. The exchange says in the consultation paper that certain types of shares that are not publicly traded in the Hong Kong market and so do not contribute to an open market in Hong Kong are currently included in the public float calculation. This is particularly true of PRC companies that list 8 shares on the Hong Kong Stock Exchange, which I will refer to going forward as PRC issuers. These PRC issuers often have A shares that are listed on a PRC stock exchange, as well as unlisted shares. Under the current listing rules, their public float is calculated by including the 8 shares and PRC listed A shares in both the numerator and denominator of the public float calculation and including the unlisted shares in the denominator only. This means that both the publicly held H and A shares are included in the numerator, while the total number of issued H, A and unlisted shares are included in the denominator. However, A shares listed on a PRC stock exchange can't be traded on the Hong Kong Stock Exchange, are not fungible with Hong Kong listed H shares, and therefore, in the view of the exchange, do not contribute to an open market in the PRC issuer's Hong Kong listed 8 shares. According to the consultation paper, the London, Australian and Singapore stock exchanges calculate the public float as a percentage of the class of shares to be listed or the class that is already listed on their exchange. The Hong Kong exchange is proposing to adopt a similar approach. Under its proposals, the public float for shares will generally be calculated by reference to the total number of shares of that class only. This proposal will generally only impact companies with other classes of shares, that is, classes of shares other than the class being listed. For companies other than PRC issuers that have a single class of shares, the basis for calculating the public float will not change. Their overseas listed shares that are in the same class as those listed on the Hong Kong Stock Exchange that are publicly held will be included in the numerator of the public float calculation, as is currently the case. Overseas companies often list the same class of shares in Hong Kong and in other jurisdictions. Where a company has listed depository receipts or depository shares on an offshore exchange, for example, American depository shares on a US stock exchange, it typically lists in Hong Kong the underlying shares of those depository shares. In this case, their public float is calculated on the basis of the shares underlying the American depository shares. This position will not change. Under the exchange's proposals, where companies have other classes of shares listed on an overseas regulated market, the numerator will only include publicly held shares of the class of shares being listed in Hong Kong, while all classes of their issued shares will remain in the denominator for the purposes of the calculation. Looking now at the position for PRC issuers, following changes to PRC regulations that took effect in February 2023, 8 shares, A shares and unlisted domestic shares are considered as one class of shares and have substantially the same rights in terms of voting, dividends and asset distribution on liquidation. The way in which the public float is calculated for PRC issuers is therefore modified. The public float calculation for a PRC issuer that has no other listed shares will not change. Its public float will be calculated by reference to its publicly held H shares as a percentage of the total number of its issued shares, that is, its H shares and unlisted shares. However, the calculation of the public float of a PRC issuer that has A shares listed on a PRC exchange, that is an A and H share issuer, will change. Under the exchange's proposals, the numerator will only include the company's publicly held H shares, while the denominator will include all the company's issued shares that are in the same class as its H shares, that is, its listed A shares and unlisted shares, as well as its H shares. The reason the exchange gives for including the A shares and unlisted shares in the denominator is that this will ensure that the amount of publicly held H shares listed in Hong Kong amounts to a meaningful percentage of all the PRC issuers' issued shares that have substantially the same rights as its H shares. Calculating PRC issuers' public float as a percentage of their H shares only could, according to the exchange, lead to PRC issuers listing a much smaller proportion of their total share capital than other overseas companies. The exchange's proposals would also remove the current requirement for shares carrying weighted voting rights, which must be unlisted, to be included in the denominator when calculating the public float of companies with weighted voting rights structures. Similarly, the exchange proposes removing the requirement to include promoter shares and promoter warrants in the denominator when calculating the public float of special acquisition companies, SPACs. The listing rules require that the publicly held shares of a new listing applicant must have an expected market value of at least 125 million Hong Kong dollars or 45 million Hong Kong dollars for GEM at the time of listing. The exchange is now proposing to revise the relevant listing rules, Main Board Listing Rule 8091 and GEM Listing Rule 1123-2A, to clarify that the minimum market value requirement applies to the publicly held shares, quote, for which listing is sought, unquote, and not the applicant's publicly held shares in general. The exchange is also proposing to revise the definition of the public that applies for the purposes of calculating the public float. The public is currently defined as persons other than core connected persons, that is, directors, chief executives, and substantial shareholders of the listed company and its subsidiaries and their close associates. In the case of PRC listed companies, supervisors are also excluded from the definition. Other parties excluded from the definition of the public are those whose acquisition of the listed company's shares has been financed by a core connected person. Those who take instructions from a core connected person in relation to their acquisition, disposal, or voting of the listed company's shares, and the listed company itself as the holder of its own treasury shares. The exchange proposes to additionally exclude from the definition any person whose acquisition of shares has been financed directly or indirectly by the listed company, and any person who takes instructions from the listed company as to the acquisition, disposal, or voting of the listed company's shares. If the proposal is adopted, shares held by a trustee on behalf of share scheme participants of a listed company will no longer be regarded as publicly held shares. However, it's proposed that shares held by an independent trustee on behalf of the participants of an independent share scheme, that is, shares granted to an independent grantee that remain unvested under the share scheme, would continue to be regarded as publicly held shares. The listing rules currently require at least 25% of a new listing applicant's issued shares, excluding any treasury shares, to be held by the public when it lists in Hong Kong. The exchange has discretion under the listing rules to allow a lower minimum public float of between 15 and 25% for companies with a market cap of 10 billion Hong Kong dollars or more, if certain requirements are met. For PRC-listed companies and other companies with other classes of shares listed on overseas exchanges, the total number of publicly held shares on all regulated markets, including the Hong Kong Stock Exchange, at the time of listing, must be at least 25% of the company's total number of issued shares. The exchange is proposing to introduce tiered initial public float thresholds based on the listing applicant's market cap at listing. The reasons the exchange gives for tiered initial public float thresholds include that even the lowest public float threshold of 15% currently allowed under the listing rules can require so-called mega cap companies to have an extremely large amount in dollar value of their listed shares in public hands. As a result, it has granted waivers allowing a public float of less than 15% for listing applicants with market capitalizations far above 10 billion Hong Kong dollars. The smallest applicant allowed a public float below 15% since 2020 apparently had a market cap of 41.7 billion Hong Kong dollars on listing. The exchange also cites the uncertainty caused by its case-by-case approach to the grant of public float waivers as a reason for allowing a lower public float percentage for large cap listing applicants. It's concerned that the uncertainty as to whether they will be granted a public float waiver may discourage mega cap new applicants from listing in Hong Kong. The exchange also points to the unfairness of the current requirements for listing applicants on either side of the 10 billion Hong Kong dollar threshold that allows a waiver reducing the public float to between 15 and 25%. Where a listing applicant with a market cap of 10.1 billion Hong Kong dollars is allowed a public float of 15% under a waiver, the required market value of the public float would be 1.5 billion Hong Kong dollars. A listing applicant with a market cap of 9.9 billion Hong Kong dollars, on the other hand, would need a 25% public float with a market value of 2.5 billion Hong Kong dollars. The exchange also claims that its current public float percentages are higher than those of other international exchanges. The Australian and London stock exchanges have initial public float thresholds of 20% and 10%, respectively, while the Singapore Stock Exchange requires a minimum public float of between 12% and 25%, depending on the listing applicant's market cap. However, as I mentioned earlier, all those exchanges calculate public float as a percentage of the class of shares to be listed on their market, while the exchange proposes to calculate the public float as the publicly held shares of the class of shares being listed in Hong Kong as a percentage of all the listing applicants' issued shares. The exchange is proposing to introduce tiered initial public float thresholds based on the listing applicant's market cap at listing. As you can see on this slide, the proposed thresholds range between 25% for listing applicants with a market cap of 6 billion Hong Kong dollars or less, and 5% for applicants with a market cap above 70 billion Hong Kong dollars. The public float will be calculated on the basis of the class of shares in issue on listing, excluding treasury shares, but including the shares issued on listing. Shares to be issued after listing, for example, on exercise of an over-allotment option or under a share scheme, will not be included. The exchange is also proposing that these tiered public float thresholds should apply to companies applying to list on GEM. Given the minimum market cap requirement for listing on the main board being 500 million Hong Kong dollars, most companies that list on GEM have a market cap below 500 million Hong Kong dollars, which would mean that they would be subject to a 25% public float threshold, which is the same as the current GEM requirement. Listing applicants will additionally be required to disclose the applicable initial public float threshold in their listing documents. The tiered public float thresholds will apply to PRC issuers with no other listed shares. They will not, however, apply to PRC issuers with listed A shares or shares listed on other overseas exchanges, or to other companies that have other share classes listed on overseas regulated exchanges. Alternative thresholds are proposed for these listing applicants, which I'll discuss later when I talk about the requirement for these companies to list a minimum number of shares on the Hong Kong Stock Exchange. The exchange is also proposing that the new initial public float thresholds apply not only to shares, but to any class of equity securities that are new to listing, including convertible equity securities, options and warrants. They would not, however, apply to a bonus issue of a new class of securities involving options, warrants or similar rights to subscribe for or purchase shares, provided that there has been no indication in the previous 5 years that the company's shares are concentrated in the hands of a few shareholders. Looking now at what the consultation paper says about the ongoing public float, the current listing rules, of course, require listed companies to maintain the same public float percentage as at the time of listing, irrespective of changes in their market cap. The exchange notes in the consultation paper that other international stock exchanges have ongoing public float requirements that are less stringent than those applicable at the initial listing stage. It also raises the point that the current public float requirement may prevent listed companies from conducting certain transactions, such as share buybacks, if this would cause their public float to drop below 25%, notwithstanding that the transaction could benefit the listed company and its shareholders. A public float shortfall can also occur due to an independent third party acquiring shares and becoming a substantial shareholder who is excluded from the definition of the public as a result. A listed company that breaches the public float requirement is required to take steps to re-comply. However, this can be difficult and expensive. Typically, the options are for the company to issue new shares to independent third parties or for its core connected persons to sell some of their shares. However, this may not be in the best interest of the listed company and its shareholders or of the core connected persons. If market conditions are poor, they may be forced to issue or sell at a discounted price. The exchange will typically suspend trading in the shares of a listed company if its public float falls below the required minimum. However, once trading in a listed company's shares has been suspended, restoration of the public float can be even more difficult and expensive, as sales by the listed company's core connected persons have to be conducted off-market and with no benchmark market price. The exchange can also cancel the listing of shares if it considers that there are insufficient shares held by the public, or if the shares have been suspended from trading for 18 months, or in the case of GEM, 12 months. Cancellation of listing, however, deprives shareholders of the ability to trade out of the position, given that there is no alternative trading platform available in Hong Kong for delisted securities. The exchange says in the consultation paper that it has received suggestions in the past that it introduce an over-the-counter platform for trading delisted shares, as seen in other markets such as the US. Given these various issues, the exchange has asked for views on the appropriate ongoing public float requirements, on whether listed companies should be allowed to maintain a lower public float level after listing than that required at listing. It has also asked for respondents' views on whether it should retain its current practice of suspending trading of listed companies whose public float falls below 15% or 10% in the case of companies allowed a public float of less than 25% at the time of listing. The exchange would conduct a further consultation on the detailed ongoing public float proposals after reviewing the feedback on its proposed changes to the initial public float requirements. Changes to both initial and ongoing public float requirements would be implemented together only after the conclusion of that subsequent consultation. The exchange proposes to apply ongoing public float requirements only to listed shares and not to convertible securities, options, warrants, or similar rights. The exchange also requested views on whether an OTC market should be established in Hong Kong. It asked for feedback particularly on the potential benefits and risks of establishing an OTC market, the functions that an OTC market should serve, and whether an OTC market should be open to retail investors. Currently, listed companies are required to state in their annual reports that they comply with the public float requirement. While the listing rules do not require them to state the actual percentage of publicly held shares, it's recommended best practice under the Corporate Governance Code that they should disclose this information in their corporate governance reports, which are published as part of their annual reports. According to the consultation paper, most listed companies only confirm compliance with the public float requirement and do not disclose the actual number or percentage of publicly held shares. The exchange is proposing to require listed companies to disclose in their annual reports the percentage of the class of shares listed on the Hong Kong Stock Exchange, excluding treasury shares, that are held by the public at the end of the financial year. In the case of PRC issuers, the requirement will be to state the percentage of publicly held H shares. It's also proposing to require listed companies to disclose in their annual reports the composition of ownership of the relevant class of shares listed on the Hong Kong Stock Exchange at the end of the financial year. The disclosure can be in the form of a table and must identify specified categories of shareholders who are public and non-public shareholders. The categories of shareholders who are not members of the public that must be disclosed are substantial shareholders of the listed company and their close associates, who must be identified on an individually named basis. Directors, supervisors, and the chief executive of the listed company and their close associates, who must be identified on an individually named basis, and other persons excluded from the definition of public, including directors, chief executives, and chief executives of the listed company's subsidiaries and their close associates, and other persons outside the definition of the public, such as persons accustomed to taking instructions from a core-connected person, and the categories of shareholders who are public shareholders that must be identified are any people that are defined as the public and have disclosed their interest pursuant to Part 15 of the SFO, who must be identified on an individually named basis, any independent trustee holding granted but unvested shares of a share scheme on behalf of the independent scheme participants, and other members of the public. These categories specified in the consultation paper are not included in the draft listing rule amendments and will instead be included in the new guidance. The exchange notes that its proposals only require persons connected at the level of the LISCO to be identified by name, and that this information should be easy to find since these shareholders are required to disclose their interests in listed company shares under Part 15 of the SFO. Listed companies would be required to make this disclosure based on information that's publicly available and within the knowledge of directors in preparing the annual report. It acknowledges that the identities of shareholders holding shares through CCAS are not visible and that notices filed under the SFO may not reflect the position as at the listed company's year end. It suggests that listed companies include comments in their annual reports to reflect the source of information in these situations. The exchange says that it would not require listed companies to exhaust all possible means to determine the identities of their underlying shareholders. It would not expect them to conduct an investigation under Section 329 of the SFO, for example. The exchange will expect companies to make reasonable efforts to determine their actual public float for the purpose of the required disclosure. It suggests that they could, for example, require their core connected persons and other shareholders they have identified as non-public shareholders to notify them of their shareholdings and subsequent changes to them. Subject to the outcome of the proposal, the existing recommended best practice to disclose the actual percentage of publicly held shares will be repealed. Looking now at the Stock Exchange's proposal on initial free float requirement. The listing rules do not currently impose a free float requirement. That is a requirement that at least some of a listed company's shares have no restrictions on their disposal. Following a company's listing on the Hong Kong Stock Exchange, a number of shares will normally be subject to restrictions on their disposal, which are usually referred to as lockups. These include shares held by the company's controlling shareholders, which are subject to a 12-month lockup after listing under the listing rules. IPO shares placed with cornerstone investors are also typically placed subject to a 6-month lockup after listing. Pre-IPO investors will also generally enter into a voluntary lockup agreement with the listed applicants or the underwriters. The situation is, however, different for specialist technology companies that list on the main board under Chapter 18C. These applicants must have shares that are free of restrictions on their disposal, with a market cap of 600 million at the time, Hong Kong dollars, at the time of listing. The lack of a general initial free float requirement means that when a company lists in Hong Kong, there's no guarantee that there is a minimum number of shares that are freely tradable after listing. According to the consultation paper, 13% of the 348 companies that listed on the main board between 20 and 2023 had a free float below 5%, despite having a public float of 25% or more. The exchange also says in the consultation paper that the Australian, London, and Singapore stock exchanges and NASDAQ have initial free float requirements ranging between 10 and 25%. The exchange is therefore proposing that a portion of the class of shares being listed must be held by the public and must not be subject to any restrictions on disposal at the time of listing. This initial free float, that is the publicly held shares with no restrictions on disposal, would be required to either represent at least 10% of the number of shares of the class to be listed in Hong Kong and have an expected market value of at least 50 million Hong Kong dollars or 15 million Hong Kong dollars for GEM, or have an expected market value of at least 600 million Hong Kong dollars at the time of listing. According to the consultation paper, around 30% of the companies that listed on the main board between 2020 and 2023 would not have met the proposed free float requirement. In the case of a new applicant PRC issuer that has no other listed shares, the requirement will be modified so the listing applicant's publicly held 8 shares that are free from restrictions on disposal must be either 10% of the total number of issued shares of the same class, that's 10% of the number of its issued 8 shares and unlisted shares, with an expected market cap at listing of 50 million Hong Kong dollars or 15 million Hong Kong dollars for GEM, or have an expected market value of at least 600 million Hong Kong dollars at the time of listing. In the case of a PRC issuer with other listed shares, such as an A and H share issuer, it's proposed that the 10% free float should be calculated based on 8 shares held by the public that are not subject to any disposal restrictions as a percentage of its total number of 8 shares only. This is because a 10% initial free float requirement based on the total number of shares in the class to which the 8 shares belong could create too high a bar and discourage these companies from listing in Hong Kong. A and H share issuers would then be required to have publicly held 8 shares that are free from restrictions on disposal, representing at least 10% of the total number of issued 8 shares only that have an expected market cap at listing of 50 million Hong Kong dollars or 15 million Hong Kong dollars for GEM, or having an expected market value of at least 600 million Hong Kong dollars at the time of listing. If the initial free float proposal is adopted, the exchange is proposing to also extend it to specialist technology companies to replace the initial free float requirement that currently applies to them. Only shares issued at the time of listing, excluding treasury shares, will be used in calculating the free float. Shares that are held by an independent trustee on behalf of independent participants under a share scheme will not be counted towards the proposed initial free float requirement, although they will count as part of the public float. This is because the shares have not yet vested under the share scheme and are not available for trading. The proposed free float requirement would only apply to listings of shares and will not be extended to listings of convertible securities, options, or warrants. Under the current listing rules, listing applicants with other classes of shares, other than the class being listed in Hong Kong, must list at least 15% of the total number of their issued shares, having an expected market cap of at least 125 million Hong Kong dollars or 45 million Hong Kong dollars if the listing is on GEM. The purpose of the requirement is to ensure that sufficient shares are listed in Hong Kong to attract a critical mass of investor interest. In practice, the requirement is most relevant to PRC issuer applicants that have PRC listed A shares at the time they list 8 shares in Hong Kong. I'll refer to these as A and H listing applicants in this webinar. The exchange has apparently received comments that the 15% threshold is too high for listing applicants with very high market caps, particularly A and H share listing applicants, because it requires them to make extremely large offers. A and H applicants typically have to rely on the 8 share offering to meet the requirement, and 15% of their total number of shares can represent an extremely large amount in Hong Kong dollars, according to the exchange. These listing applicants may not need to raise such a large amount of funds. Concerns have been expressed that the requirement can deter very large PRC companies from listing in Hong Kong. Between 2020 and 2023, the exchange apparently granted waivers of the minimum 15% threshold to 4 of the 10 A and H share listing applicants that listed. The consultation paper also says that other international stock exchanges it has looked at do not require companies with multiple share classes to ensure that the share class listed accounts for a minimum percentage of their total number of issued shares. The exchange is therefore proposing to revise the current requirements so that the PRC listing applicants with other listed shares, such as A and H listing applicants, will need to list 8 shares that either represent at least 10% of the total number of shares in the class to which the 8 shares belong, excluding treasury shares, or have an expected market value of at least 3 billion Hong Kong dollars at listing. The exchange will apply the same requirement for the minimum number of shares to be listed to other listing applicants with other share classes listed on overseas regulated markets. They will need to list shares of the class to be listed on the exchange that either represent at least 10% of their total issued shares, excluding treasury shares, or have an expected market value of at least 3 billion Hong Kong dollars at listing. The lower percentage requirement and alternative 3 billion Hong Kong dollar market value threshold are aimed at removing the regulatory uncertainty for mega cap A and H listing applicants, as they will no longer need to apply for a waiver. The exchange expects that the proposed listing rule amendments, if adopted, will make Hong Kong a more attractive listing venue for extremely large PRC issuers, which is in line with Hong Kong government policy, and also for PRC companies keen to make H share offerings smaller than the extremely large 8-share offerings that have been seen in the past, due to the requirement that companies list shares in Hong Kong that amount to at least 15% of their total issued shares. The exchange is also proposing that these thresholds should apply as the minimum initial public float thresholds for A&H listing applicants and other listing applicants with other classes of shares listed on overseas regulated exchanges. This means that the required minimum percentage of 8 shares or class of shares to be listed in Hong Kong must also be publicly held. As I mentioned earlier, the exchange is proposing to clarify the minimum market value of shares in public hands requirement by revising it to state that the publicly held shares of the class being listed on the exchange must have an expected market value of 125 million Hong Kong dollars and 45 million Hong Kong dollars for GEM at the time of listing. The exchange is therefore proposing to remove the minimum market value requirements that currently apply to the class of shares being listed in Hong Kong by listing applicants with other classes of listed shares and to the 8 shares of A&H listing applicants. The exchange will also remove the current listing rules requirement that requires the market value of 8 shares to be at least 50 million Hong Kong dollars on listing. The result of these changes is the public float requirement for A&H applicants is that they must have publicly held 8 shares that represent 10% of the total number of issued shares of the same class, that is, its A&H and unlisted shares, and have a market value of 125 million Hong Kong dollars or 45 million Hong Kong dollars on GEM, or have an expected market value of at least 3 billion Hong Kong dollars. The public float calculation for other listing applicants with other classes of shares listed on overseas regulated markets will be the same. That means that they will need to have publicly held shares of the class to be listed on the exchange that either represent at least 10% of the total number of their issued shares, excluding treasury shares, and have a market value of 125 million Hong Kong dollars or 45 million Hong Kong dollars on GEM, or have an expected market value of at least 3 billion Hong Kong dollars at listing. The existing requirement that PRC issuer listing applicants and other listing applicants with other classes of shares listed overseas list a minimum percentage of their total issued shares on the exchange applies only at the time of listing. In a 2023 consultation on listing rule changes relating to PRC issuers, the exchange consulted on whether the market was concerned that the size and liquidity of the 8-share market may decline if PRC issuers choose to issue new shares on the A-share market only after listing. Given the views expressed in response to that consultation, the exchange is not proposing to impose an ongoing obligation in respect of the number of shares a listed company with other share classes listed overseas must maintain as a percentage of its total issued shares. This leaves PRC issuers with the flexibility to decide whether to conduct follow-on offerings in the A-share or 8-share market. Where a new listing applicant has other classes of shares, apart from the class being listed on the Hong Kong Exchange, the current main board listing rules require the expected issue price of the shares being listed on the Hong Kong Exchange to be used in calculating the market cap of the listing applicant shares that are listed on other regulated markets are not listed. The GEM listing rules do not contain any provision for calculating the market cap of listing applicants with other share classes. The A shares of a PLC issuer listed on a PLC stock exchange often trade at a higher price than its Hong Kong listed H shares. If the expected issue price of a PLC issuer's H shares is used to determine the market cap of an A and H share listing applicant, this can result in the company's market cap being significantly undervalued. What happens in practice is that the market calculates the market cap of an A and H listing applicant by taking into account both the trading price of its A shares based on the number of A shares already issued and the expected offer price of the H shares to be listed on the Hong Kong Exchange based on the number of H shares it intends to issue. The exchange is proposing to amend the listing rules to provide that where a listing applicant has other classes of shares apart from the class being listed in Hong Kong, the expected issue price of the shares being listed in Hong Kong should be used to calculate the market value of unlisted shares. The exchange will issue guidance on how it will calculate the market value of a listing applicant's shares that are listed on other regulated markets, for example, A shares that are listed on a PRC exchange. So that brings me to the end of the exchange's proposals on the open market requirements. So I will now go through its proposed changes to the IPO offering mechanism. On a Hong Kong IPO, the IPO shares are typically offered in three tranches. In the cornerstone tranche, shares are placed with cornerstone investors who commit to participate in the IPO at the final offer price for a pre-agreed amount and receive a guaranteed allocation in return. Under the book building tranche, shares are typically placed with investors who are usually institutional investors after the completion of the book building process, during which they give an indication of the number of shares they're willing to subscribe for and the price that they would be willing to pay. In the subscription tranche, shares will be allocated to retail investors who have applied for them. As I mentioned earlier in the context of the free float proposal, IPO shares placed with cornerstone investors are typically subject to a lockup of at least 6 months after listing, which prevents them from selling the shares during that period. Cornerstone investors commit to subscribing for shares before a prospectus is published when the final IPO price is not known. Cornerstone investors can be important to the success of an IPO, particularly at times when the market is volatile or uncertain. The purpose of cornerstone investors is to signal to the market that they have confidence in the IPO and the listing applicant's long-term prospects. The lockup of cornerstone investors' shares is seen by some as useful in demonstrating their confidence and as a fair trade-off, given that they receive a guaranteed allocation of the IPO shares. The exchange, however, says in the consultation paper that the existing lockup on cornerstone investors may dissuade some potential investors from participating as cornerstone investors. This is because some institutional investors, including some fund managers, are not allowed to hold illiquid investments, while others prefer a flexible investment strategy so they have the freedom to dispose of IPO shares if they want, for example, when market conditions change. Another concern is that the share price of a company that lists with a significant cornerstone placing tranche can experience volatility once the six-month lockup period ends, as the market often expects cornerstone investors to sell their shares immediately after the lockup expires. This situation can be exacerbated if there is a six-month lockup on shares held by pre-IPO investors, which expires at the same time. The exchange notes in the consultation paper that there is no comparable regulatory lockup on cornerstone investors on the exchanges it's looked at. The exchange is consulting on two options regarding the lockup of cornerstone investors' IPO shares. Option A would retain the existing six-month lockup requirement, while option B would implement a staggered lockup arrangement under which all IPO shares placed with cornerstone investors would be subject to a three-month lockup period from the listing date, and 50% of IPO shares placed with cornerstone investors would be subject to a second three-month lockup requirement starting on the date the first lockup period expires. Cornerstone investors would still be allowed to enter into voluntary lockup arrangements that are longer than those required by the exchange, as is currently the case. There is currently no general minimum or maximum number of shares that must be allocated to the placing tranche of an IPO. In the case of specialist technology companies, however, the listing rules require at least 50% of the IPO shares to be taken up by independent price-setting investors in the placing tranche, who may be cornerstone investors. The reason for this requirement is that the exchange considers that it is more difficult for investors to agree the valuation of specialist technology companies as compared to companies operating in traditional industries. There is, however, an existing requirement that IPO shares placed under the placing tranche must be placed with an adequate spread of shareholders, and while the minimum number depends on the size of the placing, the listing rules state that there should be at least three holders for each 1 million Hong Kong dollars of the placing and a minimum of 100 holders. Intermediaries licensed by the Securities and Futures Commission that participate in book building and placing on a Hong Kong IPO are also subject to requirements under paragraph 17 of the SFC's Code of Conduct. Under the code, the overall coordinator of the offering is required to establish a marketing and investor strategy and allocation policy that take into account the listing applicant's preferences as to pricing and the shareholder base. The aim of the book building process is to determine the demand for and price of the IPO shares. On a typical IPO, an indicative price range is included in the prospectus. During book building, investors in the placing tranche indicate the price they're willing to pay and the amount of shares they're willing to subscribe for. The final offer price is then agreed between the overall coordinator and the listing applicant. In theory, the book building process should minimize the risk of the final offer price deviating significantly from the actual trading price once the IPO shares start trading. The exchange is proposing to require that at least 50% of the total number of shares initially offered in an IPO are allocated to investors in the book building placing tranche. The total number of shares initially offered means the total number of shares offered as disclosed in the prospectus before the exercise of any overallotment option or other size adjustment option. This measure aims to ensure that a significant portion of the IPO shares is allocated to the placing tranche, which the exchange believes will enhance the price discovery process because book building placees are involved in the price setting process. This proposal will not apply to the initial listing of specialist technology companies under Chapter 18C of the listing rules, as the exchange considers that reaching a consensus on their valuation is more challenging than for companies in traditional industries, given that these companies can list without a track record of profit and revenue, and the viability of their businesses may be uncertain. Specialist technology companies will therefore remain subject to the existing more stringent requirement for at least 50% of the total number of shares offered in their IPO to be taken up by independent price-setting investors in the placing tranche. The exchange will maintain the existing listing rule requirement for an adequate spread of shareholders on listing. What is regarded as an adequate spread of shareholders depends on the size and nature of the issue, but the listing rules specify a minimum number of 300 for companies listing on the main board and 100 for companies listing on GEM. The exchange considers these requirements to be sufficient to ensure an adequate spread of shareholders on listing. It's therefore proposing to remove the main board listing rule requirement for there to be at least three shareholders for each 1 million Hong Kong dollars placed and a minimum of 100 shareholders in the IPO placing tranche, which it considers to be unnecessary. Listing applicants and their advisors will, however, remain subject to the Code of Conduct's requirements that they ensure an adequate spread of shareholders for the IPO tranche. The exchange currently requires a listing applicant to allocate a minimum of 10% of its IPO shares to the public subscription tranche. It also requires the listing applicant to switch the allocation of IPO shares from the placing tranche to the public subscription tranche if there is significant excess demand under the public subscription tranche, even if the placing tranche is also oversubscribed. The listing rules allow an increase in the minimum allocation of shares to the public subscription tranche of up to 50% of the total offer shares, where the public subscription tranche is oversubscribed by more than 100 times. This is referred to as the clawback mechanism. According to the exchange, Most international exchanges do not mandate a minimum allocation to the public subscription tranche or impose a mandatory clawback mechanism. The main board of the Singapore Exchange requires a minimum allocation to the public subscription tranche of the lower of 5% of the offer shares or shares with a market value of 50 million Singapore dollars. However, the Singapore Exchange does not impose a clawback mechanism. The exchange has also noted in the consultation paper that it has granted waivers from the minimum allocation requirement to the subscription tranche for IPOs of 10 billion Hong Kong dollars or more, and that the listing applicants were required instead to make an initial allocation of 5% to the public subscription tranche, increasing to a maximum of 20% where the public subscription tranche was oversubscribed by 100 times or more. The exchange already implements different requirements for specialist technology companies. As you can see on this slide, the minimum required initial allocation to the public subscription tranche is 5%, increasing to a maximum of 20% where the public subscription tranche is more than 50 times oversubscribed. The exchange is proposing to replace the existing requirements and sets out two alternative options in the consultation paper. The first option, mechanism A, would require an initial allocation of 5% of the offer shares to the public subscription tranche and would adopt the same clawback mechanism that currently applies to specialist technology companies. That would allow the clawback mechanism to increase the allocation to the public subscription tranche to 10%, where demand for shares in that tranche is between 10 and 50 times the initial allocation, or to 20%, where demand for shares in that tranche is more than 50 times the initial allocation. This compares with the current requirement for a clawback of up to 50%. The second option, mechanism B, would require an initial allocation of 10% of the offered shares to the public subscription tranche, but there would be no clawback mechanism. Applicants using mechanism A would not be allowed to adopt an offering mechanism that deviates from the prescribed percentage initial allocation and the minimum thresholds triggering the clawback, unless the exchange grants a waiver. This means that the initial 5% allocation is fixed, not a minimum. Specialist technology company applicants will only be permitted to adopt mechanism A. Listing applicants adopting mechanism B would be able to allocate a minimum of 10% of the IPO shares up to a maximum of 50% due to the proposal to require a 50% allocation to the book building tranche. The exchange's reasons for the proposed changes as stated in the consultation paper include that retail investors' share of trading on the exchange has dropped significantly since 1998, when the clawback mechanism was first introduced. According to the exchange, retail investors accounted for around 53% of cash trading in 1997, compared to just 12% in 2023. It also argues that the minimum allocation to the public subscription tranche requirement and clawback mechanism reduce the proportion of shares allocated to investors in the book building placing tranche, which the exchange claims may lead to the setting of a high final IPO price that would not be acceptable to sufficient investors in the book building placing tranche as its original size. This, the exchange argues, results in a greater risk of poor share price performance after listing. If the proposals on minimum allocation of offer shares to the public subscription tranche are adopted, the exchange would also extend them to GEM listing applicants. Companies applying to list on GEM would then have to adopt either mechanism A or B to determine the number of offer shares that must be allocated to the public subscription tranche. The exchange would then make a consequential amendment to GEM listing rule 1011A to reduce the minimum percentage of IPO shares required to be publicly offered from 10% to 5%. The exchange currently imposes restrictions on the reallocation of offer shares from the placing tranche to the public subscription tranche and on the overallocation of offer shares to the public subscription tranche under Chapter 4.14 of the Guide for New Listing Applicants. The aim of these restrictions is to reduce the risk of investors in the public subscription tranche being, quote, stuffed, unquote, with shares at a price that is unattractive to participants in the placing tranche. Depending on the outcome of the proposed revisions to the requirements on the initial allocation to the public subscription tranche and the clawback mechanism, the exchange will make consequential amendments to the restrictions on reallocations and overallocations of offer shares to the public subscription tranche. Listing applicants are allowed to set an offer price below the indicative offer price or offer price range stated in their prospectus if they meet the requirements relating to the maximum permitted price reduction and prospectus disclosure. As to the limit on reducing the offer price, if an indicative offer price is given in the prospectus, the final offer price cannot be more than 10% below the indicative offer price. If an offer price range is stated in the prospectus, the top of the offer price range must not be more than 30% above the bottom of the price range, and the final offer price must be more than 10% below the bottom of that range. As to the prospectus disclosure requirements, these require a prominent statement of the possibility of downward adjustment to be included in the prospectus and disclosure of the potential impact of a downward adjustment. An upward adjustment of the indicative offer price or the top of the offer price range currently requires listing applicants to cancel their IPO and relaunch it with revised pricing and a new or supplemental prospectus, which incurs additional time and costs. They must also allow investors at least 3 business days to consider the new information and complete the required settlement processes on FINI. The exchange is proposing to expand the existing pricing flexibility mechanism to allow listing applicants to adjust the final offer price both upward and downward after the prospectus has been issued. Listed companies will be allowed to adjust the final offer price by a maximum of 10% above and below the indicative offer price or the top or bottom of the offer price range. The exchange is also seeking views on whether to retain the current upper limit on the top of the initial offer price range at not more than 30% above the bottom of the range, or reduce it to not more than 20% above the bottom of the range. Listing applicants that choose to allow the indicative offer price or price range to be adjusted upwards would be subject to similar prospectus disclosure requirements as currently apply to downward adjustment. The proposals also include an opt-in option for public offer subscribers in the event the listing applicant implements any pricing adjustment. They would be required to indicate in their application forms whether they want to subscribe for shares if the final offer price is adjusted upward or downward. So that brings us to the end of today's webinar. Thank you again for joining me, and I hope you enjoyed the webinar. Bye.